The following podcast contains explicit language.
You're listening to Working. I'm Jacob Brogan. I recently recorded my last episode on the show, so we're going back and revisiting some of my older episodes that I worked on, some of my favorite people that I spoke to. For our first episode of Working Classics, we're revisiting my conversation with Chantal Seng. This was the second episode that I did on Working, and it's special to me in part because Chantal has since become a pretty good friend of mine. She is a terrific bartender. She is a aficionado of sherry, of natural wines, and is perhaps most well-known for her work at the Reading Room at Petworth Citizen here in Washington, D.C., where on every Friday and Saturday, she creates a new menu of cocktails based on her reading that week. I'm not doing Working anymore, but if you stop by the Reading Room on a Friday or Saturday night, there's a good chance you'll find me there. Welcome to Working, Slate's podcast about what people do all day. I'm Jacob Brogan, and I write about technology and culture for Slate. Until about a year ago, I studied and taught English literature, which is part of why I'm so excited for our guest this week. Chantal Seng is a bartender who works out of the Reading Room at Petworth Citizen, a restaurant in Northwest DC. The Reading Room is a bar tucked away inside a bar. It's a book-lined space that feels set aside from the hustle and bustle of the everyday. Each week, Seng plans a new menu for the space, designing a cocktail list inspired by the work of an author she's been reading recently. We spoke to her as she was preparing to debut a Lewis Carroll-inspired menu, but in the past she's extrapolated on the work of Italo Calvino, Graham Greene, and many other authors. We talked with her about how she creates new cocktails and about the effort that she puts into setting up and running the bar itself. And in a Slate Plus extra, Seng reads Lewis Carroll's poem, The Jabberwocky, before talking us through a sherry cocktail that it inspired. I tried it, and it's delicious.
Can you tell us who you are and what you do?
My name is Chantal Seng, and I'm a bartender. I have a specific cocktail program back here where I create cocktail menus every weekend based on rotating authors, sort of a literary cocktail series.
Who are some of the authors, writers that you've worked with?
Well, currently we're doing Lewis Carroll this week, but we've gone through a lot of great authors, starting with Hemingway, Edgar Allan Poe, we've done Shakespeare, Ian Fleming, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Jules Verne, Hans Christian Andersen, Kafka, Bradbury, Murakami, Patricia Highsmith, F. Scott Fitzgerald. I'll stop. I can keep going. There's a lot.
that's a lot. So what does that mean on a week like this one for the Lewis Carroll cocktails?
Well, so that means I'll read the literature by the author, not all of it, obviously, but I'll find some stories and then I'll read those stories or those novels and then I will use that as my inspiration for the actual cocktail. So this week we have a cocktail menu of 7 drinks, riffing off of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, the Through the Looking Glass, the Hunting of the Snark, and then a few of the characters that are inside those actual pieces of literature.
What's the first step when you set out to invent or design a cocktail for an event like this one?
Well, I guess the first step is the reading, but as far as like thinking about the cocktails, it's basically inspired from the literature. So as I'm reading, I'll sort of pick up what they might be drinking, what they drink in the book, or perhaps some kind of aromatic element. If they're in a description talking about the orange groves and the cinnamon in the air, then I kind of feel like the need to incorporate said elements.
How do you figure out what should go in a specific drink?
So a lot of it just comes from making cocktails for a long time and kind of going, all right, this is in my head, this is in my palate. Let me sort of free associate and riff off and create these drinks. And a lot of them, for example, kind of start from classics.
Do you taste your work as you go?
I do. I also taste a lot of, or I'll use recipes that I've used before or riff off of other recipes. And sometimes it's not tasted, but I kind of know what the flavors are, so I feel good about it, or I'll get there that day and then sort of tweak the ratios and the proponents or go, okay, well, there needs to be more lemon to make this work, or a little bit less of the gin, or a little bit more of the vermouth. And so it's kind of a little free-flowing, improvisational on the day of.
Is there ever danger of getting sloshed while you work?
Oh, no. Professional.
How long does it usually take then to dial in a new concoction?
Oh, it takes, well, it's anywhere. It's kind of a large span of time from perfect. That took me 2 minutes to think that needs to go with that. Or I might lead in thinking, I'm reading Death in the Afternoon. You know what? There's already a cocktail named Death in the Afternoon, created by Hemingway. Or I'm reading The Jabberwock, has a cocktail named after it for Lewis Carroll. Or it could take a couple days. Sometimes I just rack my brain going, why can't I make this happen? And then it just comes to me.
Can we talk about one of the cocktails from this week?
Sure.
Maybe let's say the March Hare. What's in the March Hare?
So the March Hare has rye whiskey with some fresh squeezed carrot juice, barley tea, some ginger syrup, a little bit of lemon, and then it gets topped off with nutmeg.
What was your thinking behind that one?
Having read the story of the element in Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, we were looking at the tea party. So I did want to incorporate in the menu several drinks with tea. I'm also a huge tea drinker. It's insane how much tea I drink and own, just on a side. But so I thought, well, the March Hare, they're stuck in this time, which is like a minute before tea time, because they got into an argument in Wonderland, and so they're stuck right before tea time in this endless tea party, which is why it's a mad tea party. And what is keeping him wired versus the mouse next to him is constantly falling asleep. I was like, well, if he can't drink tea, perhaps it's whiskey. He kind of has that like wired look around him. So I was like, this could be a whiskey cocktail. And then naturally that made sense with fresh carrot juice. And I love the flavors of carrot juice and ginger and like that lemon and that spice element. It all comes together. It's something I've done before. So it kind of makes me go, oh, good. I love that. This is perfect for this.
That cocktail sounds great. How long does it take to actually make a drink when you're preparing it?
Usually drinks don't take more than a minute, and a minute is pretty long for making a cocktail, but some drinks are pre-batched if they're going to be served a lot of them and they become a punch. Some drinks, for example, require making tea a la minute, so we have to brew the tea, and that takes a little bit longer. That one would be closer to a minute or 2 minutes. Mm.
You're serving different cocktails each week. Does that mean that you have to set the bar up differently each week?
Yes. So there's some routine and then there's changing up the routine. So there's every week is a little bit of, okay, this is where I put my mixing glass. And now I'm in this bowl here, I'm going to put lemons. In this bowl here, now I'm putting cucumbers. Or I've brought in some extra accoutrements from home because I have a lot of things at home that I like to decorate the bar with. And it works for the theme of this week. So here's a teapot, or here's this stellar set of sake cups, or just because they look good.
How long does it usually take to get everything organized?
Well, on a Friday, which is when the new menu is, it always takes a good hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, depends on what's involved. A lot of the prep I will do elsewhere as well or in advance. Sometimes that requires, for example, drying things out, like garnishes, like fruits, or pickling things, juicing in general. Juicing is pretty much the day of, but yeah, it takes a little while. But on Saturdays, it doesn't take as much time because I've already had it set up the day before.
Is it difficult to source any of the liquors or other components? Do you ever find yourself looking for things that you don't have easily on hand?
Sometimes. Part of the reason why I'm doing the series in the first place is because I've been ordering and I really know what's available in the DC market very well. And I've been, so there's a part of me that's like using that base of, okay, I know where to buy this and what to get this. So it's not that hard to find stuff.
Do you ever create, you talked about pickling earlier. Do you ever create infusions or shrubs or other components that take more of your week?
Sometimes. I have in the past. I haven't recently. Just I've done some pickling in the fall and winter for garnishes with like persimmons and apples and something else. I can't remember now. Pineapples. Yeah.
I love pickled pineapple.
So good.
Surprisingly delicious. What sort of tools do you use? Does that change from week to week?
It can. I always have something, for example, to heat the water, which is our hot water pot. And then I have varying different teapots I might use to brew tea. We did Jorge Luis Borges once, and I had brought in a specific matcha teacup to use for a lot of the tea and just kind of drink out of it the whole night. The tea, that is. I like to get into character, sort of riff a little bit off of the theme. And when I'm at home, you know, putting my wardrobe together, I'll be like, ooh, this one necklace will work. I have this necklace that I got ages ago that's a little... it's kind of riffing off of like the miniature absinthe bottles that people used to wear like as necklaces and things. And it's like, oh, that's perfect for Drink Me, Alice in Wonderland. Or
so it's like the Drink Me bottles from that story?
Exactly. And then we'll do the same with the music. So our music is all off of an iPod. And depending on who we feature a certain week, we'll change the music to have it make sense.
What have you put on previous playlists for other authors?
Well, when we did Ian Fleming for James Bond Night, we played like all the soundtrack music, which was really cheesy, but kind of a lot of fun. Otherwise, we've done sort of, for Murakami Night, we did a lot of like classic jazz. Haruki Murakami was a big jazz fanatic, so that was kind of perfect. Let's see, what else? Sometimes we don't know what to play, but we'll think, oh, Margaret Atwood wrote her first novel in the 80s music tonight. So it just depends. It's kind of like we'll decide as we set up.
What kind of prep has gone into this week in particular?
So this week was definitely about thinking about the presentation of cocktails. So wanted to make sure I had candy. I wanted to get candy. That's not a lot of prep. They didn't cry, I was going to the store. We have these like small bottles that we can do bottled cocktails for, like, and label them Drink Me for the Pimm's Cup. That's the variation of Alice's in Wonderland. So it's a lot of sourcing of materials and kind of going through my tea library, drying. I was drying a lot of grapefruits so that they can sit on top of the glass and be like the bottom of a hat. Preparation this week was also just sort of carving peels to get the right shapes that we're looking for a presentation, because we like to up our garnish game back here. And it kind of has been developing over the few months that we've been doing this. Every month or every week, it's like, ooh, what do we do next? Because the garnish game is kind of exciting for the whole concept.
What are some of the garnishes this week?
So some of the garnishes include a cucumber sandwich, which is just cucumbers, two dials of cucumbers with cream cheese and mint in the middle. And it's going to sit on the cocktail. We also have the hat, which is the grapefruit dried out with a lime shell on top, kind of sitting on. So nice and colorful.
What does it take to dry a grapefruit? I assume you mean dry a grapefruit slice, is that?
Yeah, just slice them as thin as you can and low heat overnight. I put it on wax paper and I flip them so they don't get sticky, and then just get them to a nice texture.
Is that edible?
Oh, yes. A lot of the garnishes are edible. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes we'll use, for example, a couple weeks ago for Graham Greene, there was the story of the Quiet American and the character Pyle in it. He was on this premise of being into plastics in Vietnam and like sort of selling plastics and how it's for use for toys. But that was not true. so we had like a plastic little anchor as a garnish as part of the presentation. So you don't eat that, but it was there for show.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
You've been listening to bartender Chantal Tseng. In a minute, Tseng tells us how she sets up the bar to match her literary inspirations and talks to us about the shape of a typical service.
When do you start to prep for a service?
It kind of ranges anytime from 4 to 5:30, depending on what needs to be done. There are, for example, if I'm using cold teas, then I'll make sure to brew them and get them chilled in time for service. Juicing. I mean, typically it ends up being like 5 o'clock, which is like a 2-hour window. I say 4. I never get here at 4. That's a lie.
So when you do get here, what's the first thing you do?
First thing I do is take out all the things in my backpack that I brought for this weekend, including like garnishes or specialty garnishes that I had to purchase, or drying of things, articles, decor like teapots and other types of vessels. And then I start decorating. I also take survey of where the bottles are at and start to just set up them so for service. So like I know, okay, these three bottles are in one cocktail. I'll put them next to each other, that sort of thing.
What's the first thing you do when service starts going?
Smile, greet people, give them water.
How many people do you usually serve over the course of a night?
I guess it can range. So it's really busy if I've made like over 100 cocktails. But this room itself seats comfortably 16 people. Standing room, it can get fuller to like 20, 25, which is not a lot. So, you know, if you turn that a few times, having 75 people all night is really busy, you know.
There's a cliche of the bartender as therapist. Is there any truth to that for you?
Sometimes. Those are fun conversations. And sometimes, you know, it's just, I'm a person, a human being. Mm-hmm. People show up and it's you find a rapport with someone and you can talk to them, or someone's here to have a drink, to have fun, or to think about something else. It's conversation at the end of the day.
You have this book theme here. Do you ever talk books with your guests?
Oh, yes, of course. And it's fun every week. The more I read every week, and the more all the other kind of literature in the past I've read kind of starts to come together, and they just create their own conversations. There's a lot of conversations about people going, oh, you should really do so-and-so next week, or have you done this author? If it's really busy, obviously there's a little bit less conversation, and there's more, here's your drink, enjoy.
Do you ever drink during service?
I typically don't drink during service. I will sip on things, particularly to make sure the cocktail tastes right. Sometimes I drink a lot of tea, so I'm constantly drinking tea during service. Sometimes I'll have a little sherry as well.
What time of the evening does it usually start to get busiest?
Oh, it's pretty standard. You're looking at, it can get start busy at 7, but you're like 8 to 10 is like the busy time.
Is it hard to maintain quality when it gets more frantic?
I like to think no. I do have a very consistent methodology to how I make drinks. Very much of the jigger proponent, meaning that I'll measure everything. So if I make a cocktail and it needs 2 ounces, I will measure into a jigger 2 ounces and pour it in. I don't do a lot of free pouring. I certainly did when I first started bartending, like anyone did, but now I've gotten more part of this routine of measuring everything to keep that consistency. And so if it takes a while, then it takes a while, but I'm making the drink, and it's a small space, and for the most part, we don't run into too much trouble with it taking too long to get a drink.
If you have a lot of people at the bar, is it ever hard to figure out who to pay attention to?
It's about eye contact, and it's about hi and acknowledgement. So as long as someone knows that they're not being ignored, then at the end of the day, there's a good amount of time. There's like a range of time that you have. You're like, okay, they see that I see them. Great. So, and they won't get upset in 10 seconds. Maybe they will in 30 seconds, but they know I see them. You know, it's its own, like, you're always weighing and gauging.
How late does service usually go?
It's not like a late night bar by any means. It's just open at 7, stop at midnight. Sometimes we'll stay open a little later if a nice crew of regulars come. But 7 to midnight are our hours.
Do people usually come in groups or as individuals?
Both. Yeah, there's actually every now and then a couple groups that have like their own book club, and they'll just kind of show up and take over some tables and do some readings. And then there's the regulars who come as a couple or as themselves. So it's a little bit of everybody.
What do you have to do after you've ended service? How do you shut the bar down?
Clean, dispose of anything that's disposable, refrigerate things that need to be refrigerated, wiping down tables, wiping down bottles, putting things back in their places, out of the way, that sort of thing.
How did the reading room concept come about?
So a year ago, I was doing some traveling in Spain, and I went to a writer's workshop, which I've kind of always been dying to do, in the mountains. And I started doing a lot of writing, and just naturally I would write these short stories and at the end go, and here's a cocktail recipe. Because it's just in my nature to suddenly go, ooh, I just wrote this story about this so-and-so in the mountains. And I'm like, oh, this would go great with a toddy recipe. It's something that kind of naturally comes. I've done this a few times before, particularly for special events or when creating a cocktail menu. I will often use literature or art or music as like the title or riff off of it as inspiration. And then over the summer, I met with Paul, the owner, who inquired about if I'd be interested in doing a new project or some kind of project back here. And it was before the bar was built. He was planning on wanting to extend and create a bar back here. So we sat down in the reading room. I looked around and it just became obvious. I was like, well, clearly I can do literary cocktails. It'll work perfectly. It's a reading room. And it just kind of, so that's the origins, really.
When did you start developing your own cocktails?
So I started bartending, 16 years ago. And the first time I bartended, it was really exciting. Like anyone who ever starts a shift, a bartending gig, they go, ooh, and then they want to create something. It's kind of like when you start cooking for the first time, you want to be like, okay, let me go off menu and do this. So as old as that, sure. Were any of those cocktails any good? Of course not. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you go back in time and you look at your portfolio from when you were in high school and you're still doing art today, but back then you happen to come across it and you go, wow, these should be burned, you know. As far as like cocktails that I've created that I feel good about, that period of time is a little bit closer to like probably since the mid-2000s.
What's your favorite part about bartending more generally?
Oh, well, the creative process is actually a super part of reason why I love doing this. And it keeps me like talking and interacting with people and sharing something which is very creative, which I find, you know, I have a lot of passion for. I like spreading my own desire to get people to drink more sherry. I'd be like, hi, here's a sherry cocktail. You know what? Sherry is wonderful. That's another huge motivating factor.
What's the most difficult part about what you do?
Oh, the pain, the back pain.
Why do you have back pain?
It's a physical job. I'm sure you can develop back pain by sitting in a desk all the time, or you can also develop back pain by running around and shaking things and doing service and then being on your feet for a really long time. So that's definitely the worst part, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you have advice for people who want to get into cocktail crafting?
Oh, always. Always like... definitely focus on getting kind of a classic lexicon down, like learn the classics, go to classes, you know, sit behind great people making cocktails, learn the fact that it's not about just making cocktails, it's about people, and that no matter what kind of cocktail you make, you, if you have a bad experience or someone across from you is not enjoying their time, you will also not have a good experience. And so there's all kinds of components going into being a bartender.
Are there things that customers do at bars that drive you crazy that they should avoid?
Probably.
It's fine. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This was delightful. Thanks, Chantal.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Working. I'm Jacob Brogan. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the podcast. Our email address is working@slate.com. And you can listen to all 6 seasons at slate.com/working. This episode was produced by the excellent Mickey Capper. Our executive producer is Steve Lichtai, and the chief content officer of the Panoply Network is Andy Bowers.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.